Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. Donald Trump is convinced he knows what America needs and how to deal with Libya, China, and a world of headaches. Oh, and the real story about Obama's birth. And so he's seriously considering running for president. It's still early, but a lot of Republican voters tell pollsters they like Trump and believe what he believes. This hour on Point, Donald Trump's maybe run for the White House and the mood of the Republican voter. You can join the conversation. Do you take Trump seriously? Do you see the appeal? Republicans, do you think he belongs in the White House? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We will dig deep today into the Trump appeal with a biographer, a conservative politician who sees the Trump appeal, and a conservative who says Trump must be stopped. But first, I'm joined from Washington by Neil King, Jr. He's a political reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Neil, welcome to you. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Jane. Pleasure.
So a lot of attention swirling around Donald Trump. You spoke with him this week. What was your sense? Does he really want to be in the White House, or is this some sort of publicity train he's riding for a stretch?
Well, it may be something in between. I'm not sure that he necessarily envisions himself taking over in the White House should that all happen. But on the other hand, he's emphatic that this is not just a push to boost his ratings of Celebrity Apprentice and all that. He's saying he's dead serious. And I think, much to his own surprise, he's really hit a chord. And we see that in the poll numbers, the response, you know, even the story I wrote yesterday, I got all kinds of emails from people saying that they're kind of all in with Donald Trump. And it was very hard scanning the horizon of GOP, notable GOP officials, either here in Washington or in Iowa and other early states, to find people that were really speaking negatively about him. And there's this sort of sense, oddly enough, maybe that he brings some blunt, new, refreshing voice to what's otherwise a very bland early Republican primary race, and people are kind of loving it.
Blunt, new, refreshing voice, for sure. What is that chord that you say he thinks he's hit?
You know, I think at least among Republicans, it's that he's taking it to Obama, that he's going after Obama. And I actually, I don't know, I'm not necessarily doubting that he's being disingenuous or saying that he's being disingenuous on this whole birth certificate thing. But if he's not, it's played very well as a kind of tactic to get a lot of attention, solicit a lot of support among certain factions in the Republican Party. There was a New York Times poll yesterday that was saying that something like 47% of all Republicans think Obama was born outside the country, despite all evidence that he was born in Hawaii. So he's played that well, and you know, that's just one of these examples of just, you know, all of his talk, which you mentioned in the intro, of, you know, I'm going to speak truth to China and get them to revalue their currency, or I'm going to force OPEC to lower oil, gas prices or oil prices. All of these things which are sort of hyper-simplistic, bombastic, and appealing to people, evidently.
Here's Donald Trump last February. He was a surprise speaker at the annual Conservative Political Action Conference, and he made the claim, which you just referred to, Neil, and others, which we should add has been shown to be completely false, this one being that nobody at the Hawaii high school that he went to remembers him being there. The CPAC audience just loved it. Here he is.
Our current president came out of nowhere. Came out of nowhere. In fact, I'll go a step further. The people that went to school with him, they don't even know, they never saw him. They don't know who he is. Crazy.
So the birther issue gaining traction, taking on Obama, gaining some traction. Tell me about this meeting that was held in Iowa. You've been there recently. Tell us about the story of the meeting between Donald Trump and the head of the GOP in Iowa.
Well, what happened actually is just after that speech that you just ran that clip of, Matt Strawn, who's the head of the Iowa GOP, actually flew to New York and, you know, went up to Trump's suite and basically said, we would love to have you come out and headline this big Lincoln Day dinner that we have. That's our early summer fundraiser in Des Moines. That's it's actually scheduled for June 10th. And Obama said, I'd love to do it. And then his aide, Michael Cohen, who's really his top sort of conciliary on the political side, flew out in Donald Trump's big plane with Trump emblazoned on the side to Des Moines and went in, and for a whole series of full-day meetings within GOP headquarters, actually from 9 in the morning till about 5, meeting operatives, possible activists, pollsters, donors, the whole shebang. That was in early March, as I recall. And since then, this dinner has become a huge thing. Tickets are selling like hotcakes, and there is still some back and forth as to whether it's going to be in a hall that fits, you know, 2,000 people or so, which is the hall that Sarah Palin spoke in last fall. And pretty well filled, or whether they're going to push for the Civic Center or one of these bigger places that might be 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 people. So, you know, this is a some gauge, and this is where people would be paying $150 a seat for the pleasure of being at that dinner. Some gauge is a sort of excitement that seems to be mounting about this kind of weird billionaire celebrity political thing that Obama would bring. I mean, not Obama, that he would bring, Trump would bring to Iowa if he decides to jump in.
What about his finances and his wealth and having to disclose all of his financial information?
You know, there's been all this back and forth. There's been books written about how actually wealthy he is or not, how much he actually has in cash wealth as opposed to just sort of, you know, maybe wealth. Like he's talked about how his brand in itself, his name is worth $5 billion. But there was a piece that came out today from one of his, based on some conversations with one of his people, unnamed, saying that he's worth $7 billion, has $250 million in liquid assets, and he's talked about his ability or willingness to put a lot, as he describes it, of money into a campaign should he run. You know, he's one of the real oddities, and he said that he would be overjoyed to finally show people by, you know, opening up his tax returns and so on, the kind of disclosure that any candidate has to do, that he would be overjoyed to finally show the world how truly big his business is, how strong his and vast his wealth is, and so on. But it would also open him to exposure that he's never seen before, which could be uncomfortable because that kind of transparency can always be a little bit uncomfortable. So there's a little bit of skepticism out there. Well, there's a lot about, is he really going to go forward on this in the first place? But one of the things that people point to is skepticism about whether he's going to be willing to be that transparent, you know, 2 or 3 months down the road if he really becomes a candidate.
There's the finances and there are the issues. I mean, in his pseudo run for the presidency in 2000, he endorsed universal health care, a 14% one-time tax on estates, over $10 million to help bolster Social Security and Medicare, two positions that certainly any progressive liberal would support. But today, he's against universal health care, opposes gun control. He says he's now firmly pro-life. So a flip-flop on a lot of these issues over the course of some years. Is he a true conservative? I mean, where does he stand politically?
It's very hard to say. I mean, one of the things, you look at all the various potential candidates out there, you know, Pawlenty, Romney, Gingrich, everybody would have to be sort of walking away from or repudiating some steps that they've taken in the past. But with something like Trump, he's left such a huge field of things that he would have to distance himself from that it's really just like the most target-rich environment you can imagine. I mean, and it's some of the things that people have already started to go after. I mean, he wrote in his book, The Art of the Deal, he wrote a passage where he was questioning whether there was anything really behind the smile and the allure of Ronald Reagan. This being a book in 1987, basically the very end of the Reagan administration, that kind of thinking that somehow the Reagan might have been an empty suit or something is, of course, totally anathema in Republican circles. So there's a whole array of things like that. I mean, he gave $50,000 to Obama's former chief of staff Rahm Emanuel's election campaign in Chicago in December. $50,000 is a lot of money to be giving to a person that, you know, Republicans don't necessarily see as their kind of guy. And he has a whole track record of giving actually quite a lot of money to Democratic candidates, Hillary Clinton, Obama himself when he was running for the Senate, for various Democratic campaign committees. He's talked about this, and he said, you know, that's the price of doing business. I do business all over. I live in a Democratic state in New York. And so on, but not just the positions that you're mentioning, but also this whole long history of giving significant money to Democratic campaigns would also haunt him. But for the most part, at the moment, he's been the ultimate sort of Teflon guy because he can just kind of brush it aside in sometimes humorous ways, and people give him the benefit of the doubt for the most part so far.
How long do you think Donald Trump will last on the road to a possible candidacy?
My bet is that he actually does get in, and he at least announces an exploratory committee, and he sees how it goes in Iowa through the summer. I'm more skeptical about whether he's in the picture in, you know, November. But if he is, and if he really has taken off, and he decides to actually go through with it into the Iowa caucus and into the New Hampshire primary, he could be a factor. And, of course, the thing that is most terrifying to Republicans, and he's kind of waffled on whether he would do it, is if he decides to run as an independent, it would almost certainly, right off the bat, just guarantee that Obama would be elected. Mm. And there were some poll numbers that came out of today, just out of Iowa, that sort of nodded to that, where just the poll numbers would that Obama would win Iowa with 43%, Mitt Romney 27%, and Trump 21%. And, you know, if you think back to when Ross Perot got about 18% of the vote nationally, it's not at all hard to imagine Trump getting better than Ross Perot did then, and totally nixing any chances for the actual Republican standard bearer.
You mentioned the other candidates. I'm just curious, as a final question here, Neil, how much attention is he taking away from the established presidential hopefuls at this point? And is that a concern to the establishment?
It is. I mean, this is a moment where a lot of these people are wanting to introduce themselves and really start to gain hold. You know, Tim Pawlenty, Newt Gingrich, though he's been around for years, he's been all over the country. Mitt Romney himself has just sort of come out of hiding, so to speak. But you know, Trump has been devouring so much attention and basically sucking up all the oxygen. There was a Pew poll that came out yesterday that was saying 39% of Republicans are aware of the fact that he's likely to run, and that was more than all the other candidates combined. In terms of just awareness among the Republican electorate. So at the moment, not only is he leading in a lot of these polls, but if you just ask people, who do you think is going to run, there's just this huge awareness that Trump's likely to do it. So he's seizing the spotlight, and that is definitely a concern to a lot of the other potential candidates.
Neil King Jr. is a political reporter for The Wall Street Journal. He joined me from Washington. Neil, thank you very much.
Thanks, Jane. It was a pleasure.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. Donald Trump is getting big poll numbers among conservatives these days with his brash solutions for the country and his Obama birther claims. And we're asking today what that all means. In a few minutes, we'll speak with a Republican politician in Iowa, where Trump is pretty popular, and to a conservative columnist in Washington who thinks Trump is just a populist caricature. But first, joining me from New York City, Donald Trump's hometown, is Gwenda Blair. She's the author of Donald Trump, Master Apprentice, and The Trumps, Three Generations That Built an Empire. Nice to have you with us, Gwenda.
Hi there.
As a biographer, what do you make of Donald Trump so publicly pushing this notion that, once again, he might run for president, that he's considering it?
Donald has always been a remarkably shrewd observer of American culture. And somebody who pays attention to what people really want, not what they might say they want, but what they really want, which has served him well with his luxury apartments and hotels by providing sort of very shiny accommodations full of mirrors and brass and lots of lights. And he's got his finger on the pulse in a way, or a pulse anyway, of skepticism and doubt about Obama's birth certificate and the whole birther movement. But Donald's very shrewd about how he brings it up. So he talks about his investigators who found amazing stuff, but we're never going to hear what that stuff is. We're just going to hear about how amazing it is.
For 20 years, Trump has been doing this, though. He's been popping out in the media during election cycles, declaring that he might be running for president. A decade ago, he appeared on the cover of JFK Jr.'s magazine, George, right, announcing that he would consider a run. Is this a pattern here? I mean, is he captivated by the idea of running for president?
I think he's captivated by the idea of the spotlight. And he's very well-timed, these runs. His various political forays or seeming forays have always been in exact coordination with some project, with a new book, a new real estate project, now, of course, Celebrity Apprentice, or his whole apprentice series. So will he really go through with it? The idea that he would ever allow close scrutiny of his finances seems very unlikely. And the idea that he would ever really want to subject himself to the kind of scrutiny that a presidential candidate would receive.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you next, because he does like to fashion his own image, and he doesn't like to be challenged by anyone, especially reporters. What about that ability to withstand the scrutiny that comes from for the White House?
He's very good at parsing a situation of when those in previous iterations when he's talked about how wealthy he is and said and declared that he was, you know, not just the 150th wealthiest person in the country or whatever the most recent Forbes list would have him as, but really the 100th most wealthy, and would sort of wave around audits to prove this. They're done privately. His holdings are all private. He's always very careful. He doesn't quite ever step over the line. But if he has armies of reporters going after him, I don't think that that's something that he would – I think that he'll bow out.
Here's a call from Julia, one of our listeners in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Hi, Julia. Welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. My concern is that he's extremely wealthy. We all know that. But is his bid – does he want power? Is that – he has all the money he needs. Is he – my concern is that now he's just going after power. I wonder why – Republicans, they're very often, they say, we don't like big business, we don't like all these bureaucrats, we want an outsider. But it seems to me that he is very much an insider.
Julia, thank you. Gwenda.
Donald's concern, ever since he first became involved in the real estate business and really took his place in the Trump organization, has been building the Trump brand. He's been remarkably successful at that. He was one of the first people to really get celebrity branding and to apply it to real estate, where that had just hardly ever been done at all. And, of course, he's now had brand extensions across multi-platforms to TV shows, fountain pens, cars, suits, a doll. There was a Donald Trump doll about 5 years ago. So I think that that's really what's happening now. This is just extending the brand. And it's building the brand, holding on to the brand, so that there's a Trump franchise that he is now able to use around the world, where various real estate projects, hotels, whatever, essentially pay to use his name.
And to that end, that master branding, tell us why you titled your book Donald Trump Master Apprentice.
He was always a very careful observer. And when he was in high school, this is one of the things that really intrigued me. When he was in high school, he was always a good athlete. But his coach told me that what made him a very good athlete was that he was so coachable that he listened when the coach suggested ways to improve his game. And he's always been somebody who pays attention and course corrects. So the various contradictions that you were talking about, that in the late 80s to talk about a possible presidential run and to have relatively kind of what we would have called centrist Republican ideas, that was what was, you know, the appropriate thing to do then. Now, to run as a Republican candidate, those ideas are out the window, and he has a whole new set of ideas.
You've talked a lot about, just from a personality perspective, Donald Trump's attention span and that not being conducive to what it takes to sit in the Oval Office.
I think that once he's got added presidential refurbished, I should say, because he already had presidential candidate in his kind of career portfolio, once that's been kind of, you know, brightened up and brought up to date, that he'll move on to the kind of gritty, mind-numbing attention to political and international affairs that he would have to get into were he to actually be president seems very far away to me from the celebrity brand of Donald Trump.
Gwenda Blair is the author of Donald Trump, Master Apprentice, and The Trumps, Three Generations That Built an Empire. Gwenda, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you so much.
Joining me now from Sioux City, Iowa, Bob Vanderplatz. He is president of the Iowa-based conservative Christian organization, The Family Leader. He served as the Iowa state chair for Mike Huckabee's 2008 presidential campaign and has himself run for governor of Iowa. Nice to have you with us, Bob.
Jane, it's great to be with you.
And joining me from Washington is Matt Continetti. He is opinion editor and columnist for The Weekly Standard. And this week, he is guest blogging for WashingtonPost.com's Right Turn. Matt, nice to have you.
Thanks, Jane.
Matt, I'll start with you. How do you view Donald Trump as a possible presidential contender?
I view him poorly. I think he's an egomaniac. I think he's in love with himself. And I think he's peddling a pretty toxic brew of conspiracism in the form of this birther thing and nonsense. And then also, his economic agenda is a 25% tariff on all imported Chinese goods, which would not only commence a trade war with China that would probably collapse the American economy, but raise the cost of living for all Americans who have been enjoying for now 30 years low-cost consumer goods. So he's a disaster. And I don't think if he runs, he'll be the nominee. The danger is if he is rejected by the party and then goes third party to isolate, 5-6% or more, thus handing the election to Obama.
What do you make of the birthing issue that Donald Trump appears to be latching onto? And beyond that, the 48% of Iowa Republicans who say they don't believe Obama was actually born in the United States.
Well, I thought it was interesting that today Trump has an op-ed in the USA Today, major newspaper, where he says, the only reason I'm talking about birtherism, the idea that Obama wasn't born in the United States, is because the media wants me to talk about it. And in fact, he ended the piece by saying, I want to talk about creating jobs and balancing the budget and, being a strong negotiator on the international stage and such. So now even Trump, it seems, is calculating, like his biographer alluded to, that this might be a dead end for him. And it is a dead end. It's a total dead end. It's obviously, it's wrong. But of course, it's also a complete distraction. The fact is, Obama is a vulnerable incumbent president. And the way that you're going to get him out of the White House isn't by talking about his birth certificate. It's by talking about the massive deficits. It's about talking about the lackluster economy. It's about talking about this unpopular health care law that's going to go into effect if he gets a second term. Those are the things that are going to drive Obama out, not this birther conspiracy.
Bob Vanderplatz, let me get you in here. You hear Matt Continetti saying this is a distraction. Donald Trump is a distraction in this field of potential Republican candidates in 2012. How do you see it? What's the appeal to you? Do you welcome him to the field?
Well, I definitely welcome him to the field. I mean, we really welcome his voice. And although I understand where Matt is coming from, I think what Donald Trump is bringing to his campaign so far is somebody just being very blunt, speaking his mind. And to be quite honest with you, I think Iowans and Americans, they want somebody to be very blunt, very honest, very transparent. And when it comes to the birthing certificate, I think where Iowans are at, I think most of them probably believe, he probably was born in America. But for us, we know that's about a half-hour deal to get it from our county courthouse, display it, show it, prove it, put it behind like any other good leader would. Like, don't let this be a distraction. The fact of the matter is that 48% of Iowans have a question, was he actually born in the United States? I think if I'm President Obama, put that issue behind you. Let's start talking about real issues facing this country. But the fact that he just won't come clean with that issue, I think that makes a lot of Iowans suspect, and they're glad to see Trump bringing it up.
Well, I think that's a separate issue, even though the legal document in Hawaii, which is called the Certification of Live Birth, proves that he was born in Hawaii. I'm just curious, back to Donald Trump and this sort of street fighter image, what's the appeal? How does the pushy New Yorker play in the heartland? You mentioned that blunt, speaking your mind kind of guy. Is that what Iowans want? It's sort of the Tea Party populist anger that Trump's dipping into?
I don't know if it's an anger that he's dipping into, but I think it's a mood of where Iowans are at. And Iowans are very intellectual and they're very savvy when it comes to politics, and in particular presidential politics. But I think what they're seeing is that this country's got some real issues facing it. And so maybe Trump is putting that that pendulum swing, you know, too far or too exaggerated, but they want somebody to bring it up. I mean, we see in Iowa that we're losing manufacturing jobs to China. They want somebody to talk about what's going on in China. They see that, you know, their gas prices are going up to $4 a gallon, and it looks like it's going to go north of that. They want somebody to talk about OPEC and oil. They don't trust Obama, whether it be with the deficit, the health care, the economy, and so they're saying, just show us a birth certificate and let's move on.
Let's get to it. I got to interrupt you because I got a call around the block here. Amanda's first in Salem, New Hampshire. Hi, Amanda. Welcome.
Hi, James.
Hi.
I just was calling because your first speaker was talking about how there's no dissent against Donald Trump. And my brother went on Facebook to the Donald Trump Facebook page to point out to people that Donald Trump has two corporate bankruptcies behind him, and he's essentially advocating a trade war with China. And immediately, well, people, of course, attacked him, which was no surprise. But then he was unliked on the Facebook page, and then they deleted all his postings. And so my concern about Trump is, you know, how, you know, if he runs for president, how much is that going to be reflected in a presidency with Trump?
Amanda, thank you. Matt Continetti.
Yeah, I think Amanda has it right on. I mean, the fact is we're in the silly season of the 2012 presidential campaign. I mean, the campaign doesn't really start. I mean, you can argue that it starts with the Iowa straw poll in August. And then, of course, then you have campaign after Labor Day and the primary. And then the first voting doesn't start until next January. So now we have to find some way to talk about presidential politics because political junkies love it. I love it. Everybody does. And so let's talk about who might run. And Donald Trump has been, you know, he's been teasing us now for a few months. I was there at the CPAC speech where you played that clip from. And, you know, I find Donald Trump hysterical. I think he's a comic figure. But I don't take him seriously for president. I don't think most people do, actually. I think right now what you're seeing in these poll numbers is a simple reflection of name identification. You saw the same thing in the 2008 cycle when Rudy Giuliani led the national polls for a long, long time. And then his campaign totally fizzled out. And I'll say another thing about the comparison with Giuliani and Trump. You know, Trump's moving his platform now to be much more conservative than it's been in the past. He says he's pro-life. He's going to repeal Obamacare, where he used to support universal health care. He wants taxes low and so forth. But one thing is the attitude, that New Yorker cultural aspect that he can't change, and that's just who he is. And, you know, I love New York, and I admire that about him and about Rudy Giuliani. But I'll tell you one thing. Voters in the heartland, grassroots Republican voters, that doesn't really wear well with them. And I think where Giuliani was from hurt him with Republicans, and I think Trump, where Trump is from, will hurt him, too, if he decides to run.
Here's Denise in Johnston, Rhode Island. Hi, Denise. Thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Yep. Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
I just wanted to weigh in on the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
First, about Mr. Trump. Mm-hmm. I think he's an egotistical, self-promoting con artist. And right now, he has half of America conned. All people need to do is take a look at his record, from his marriage infidelities to all his bankruptcies, and see that this man is just a big con artist. The second thing is, with Obama's birth certificate, if Obama had been a full white male, there would be no question about his birth. John McCain was born in the Panama Canal, and not once did anyone make a big deal about where he was born. So I think a big part of this is really racist. If Obama had been a white man, no one would have been talking about his birth certificate.
You see it as a mask for racism. I thank you for your call, Denise. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking Trump for president today, whether it's just a publicity stunt whether it's good for the country, whether there is any chance we'd ever have a President Trump, and why so many heartland conservatives like this pushy, twice-divorced billionaire from New York City. My guests are Matt Continetti, opinion editor and columnist for The Weekly Standard, and author of The Persecution of Sarah Palin, How the Elite Media Tried to Bring Down a Rising Star, and Bob Vanderplatz, president of the Iowa-based conservative group The Family Leader and a former Iowa gubernatorial candidate. Here's Donald Trump last Thursday on talk radio in Albany, New York. He's riffing on politicians like Obama, Hillary Clinton, and himself, and then the African-American vote. He said he is confident he knows how to win it.
Hillary Clinton did so much for the black population, so much, and she got very few votes. Then you'll hear a political reporter go on and say, had nothing to do with race, but how come she got such a tiny piece of the vote? And it's, you know, it's a very sad thing. I have a great relationship with the blacks. I've always had a great relationship with the blacks.
Bob Vanderplatz, let me ask you about that, because I know Karl Rove and House Majority Leader Eric Cantor have taken Trump to task on a lot of these issues, specifically this issue, the birther issue, so much talk about it being a racist issue at the heart of it. Karl Rove says by embracing the birther issue, Trump has made himself an inconsequential candidate, a joke candidate. Do conservative opinion leaders need to lead conservative opinion away from this very divisive issue?
Well, first of all, you know, Iowans are not into racism politics whatsoever. And I would agree with Matt, there's a big difference between running for president and becoming president. But I think where the intrigue with Trump is, one is he's Donald Trump. Two is he has access to a microphone. And three is he's taken on Obama. And so I think as Iowans, as I think a lot of the rest of the country, they're anxious for this race to get going. They're finally glad to see somebody stepping up to the microphone and addressing some issues. But the good thing about Iowa is they put these candidates through a real vetting process. And so if Donald Trump decides to be a candidate for president, he'll get vetted just like everybody else, like Rudolph Giuliani did in 2007, 2008. He's going to get vetted, whether it's with his personal issues, finance issues, or some of the rhetoric issues. He will get vetted as well. And if he meets that vetting, they'll vote for him. If he doesn't meet the vetting, they're not going to vote for him.
One of our listeners from our Facebook page, after hearing that sound and speaking about Trump, says, what a joke, your supposedly good relationship with the blacks just reduced by one. Your thoughts on all this, Matt Continetti?
Well, I mean, I started laughing when I heard that clip you played. And there's just, it won't stand up to scrutiny. I mean, Bob's in Iowa, and you just think about Trump in front of Iowa Republican voters, twice bankrupt, thrice married man, whose positions have been all over the map. I just don't think it's not going to stand scrutiny, and it won't last either. I mean, I think we're in the middle of a Trump bubble that's brought on by the fact that Congress is in recess, so there's not much to talk about in Washington. Obama's on a fundraising swing, so he's out of town too. And right now, everyone's eager. I think Bob's right. Republicans are eager for someone to take on Obama and to be blunt about Obama, and Trump is definitely doing that. There's no question. He's kind of, in a way, he's kind of just telling Republicans, look, that you're right. Obama isn't a serious president. And so people are responding to that. There's no question. But at the end of the day, this is all name recognition and kind of a flirtation that won't last, I think, past the summer, if that.
Bob, you're there in Iowa. What do you make of the issues, I mean, and Trump's stand on them, his reversal flip-flop, really, on a host of issues, from same-sex marriage and abortion to universal health care, gun control? I mean, does that bother you? Does that bother conservatives in places like Iowa?
Well, sure. That's going to be, all part of the vetting process. Now, I would say from my own personal perspective, if he's actually going to be pro-life, if he's going to be pro-marriage, if he's going to be pro-Second Amendment, pro-free enterprise, limited government, those type of things, we're glad he's coming our way if he's genuine about that. But as Matt says, if his record is going to speak something clearly different, or if it's going to show a consistency of flip-flopping, Iowans are going to have a real issue with that. But I think as well, Jane, I think what it shows to those of us in Iowa is they are really looking for somebody who's really going to stand above the crowd and say, I'm the one to take on Obama. I think there's a lot of interest in that. Now, there's a lot of intrigue out here to see, you know, does Mike Huckabee run? Doesn't he run? Does Mitt Romney play in Iowa? Doesn't he play in Iowa? Does Michelle Bachmann, Tim Pawlenty, Newt Gingrich, Herman Cain, or somebody else rise above the field? So they're really looking for somebody. I think it's what this shows as well. And he's a voice of intrigue, and I think you're seeing a lot of people rally to that.
Matt Continetti, what do you think this says about the GOP, more broadly speaking?
Well, I think it says that the GOP is open for fresh faces. I mean, if there's one thing that I hear from all my Republican readers or, you know, talking to Republicans across the country, it's the need for fresh faces. They think a lot of these 2012 presidential candidates are retreads, whether it's Mitt Romney, whether, you know, who's back from 2008, or Sarah Palin. We know who from 2008. We know Newt Gingrich from even farther back in the 1990s. Now, Huckabee is a slight exception to that rule. A New York Times poll out today shows that he maintains widespread popularity not only with Republicans but also the general public, which is almost unheard of for a Republican. But so he's a slight exception, but even he, you know, it's okay. He's been around the block. When you talk to Republicans, I think they want to see someone new, someone fresh. And, you know, unfortunately, from my perspective, Trump is that person right now. A blogger I read the other day had a great idea, which was we really need to divide the Republican primary into two brackets, kind of like the NCAA tournament. And you have one bracket for the serious candidates, you know, Romney, Huckabee, Barber, Pawlenty, Huntsman, Mitch Daniels, if he decides to run. And so they'll compete in that bracket. And then we'll have another bracket for the people like Trump, people like Bachmann, people like Herman Cain, who at the end of the day, they're just not going to become president and probably not the nominee.
More calls. Here's David in Chesapeake, Virginia. Hi, David. Glad you waited. Welcome.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
You know, the way I see this, and I know a lot of people may disagree, but, you know, I've always had a knack of seeing through the thin of everything. And you know, the GOP for the longest time has always been trying to, you know, get the upper hand on the middle class, upper hand on the workers, you know, the labor unions, everything, because they want, you know, they want big business and corporations to win and take over and have the upper hand in the United States. What I see the GOP doing, I mean, every year, you know, every 4 years, they're changing up their plans, changing up how they come at the public. And this is just another stunt by the GOP to basically undermine their continued touting of what they want to do versus, you know, what they really do based on actions. And by bringing Trump in, you know, this is like their last straw. Look, we've got to get, you know, corporations the top of everything. We want control. We want to reduce, you know, the unions. We want to reduce the middle class to nothingness. We want to tax, you know, we want to do this. We want to reduce wages, because really at right now the corporations are at a huge turmoil in competing with the rest of the world, and they want more and more profits.
Mm-hmm.
So what better person to throw at the public is someone like Donald Trump, who has been successful in a lot of things. He basically comes in and is going to, you know, with his mind in this, you know, business mind, he's going to come in and try to run government the way that he runs his own businesses, pass the laws, get the corporations and the GOP in control of that of our country from a corporation standpoint and profit standpoint.
I get it.
And it's going to be the heck with everybody else.
I hear what you're saying, David. I'm glad you called with that perspective. Here's Stephanie with another one from Fort Drum, New York. Hi, Stephanie. Welcome.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Well, I know this seems kind of far-fetched, but I'm just wondering, is this a ruse? Because he's so smart and shrewd. You know, is this an intentional maneuver to get Obama reelected by pushing out other Republicans if he is taken seriously ultimately? I haven't really heard anybody approach it from that angle, you know, because he's been saying such outlandish things like the birther, you know, question. So what do your guests think about that?
Stephanie, thank you. Matt Continetti.
That's an interesting thesis. I mean, there's really no way of knowing. The only person who knows why he's doing what he's doing is Donald Trump. And I've just, as someone who's watched Trump over the years, it seems to me he just enjoys the attention. I mean, he's a media hog. He loves being a celebrity. And I think that, you know, that's probably the simplest explanation. I mean, the previous caller, I will say, I think is totally wrong, simply because the GOP doesn't want Trump to run. Everyone from Karl Rove, you know, to George Will, to Charles Krauthammer, you know, my little small corner of the punditocracy, too. I mean, we're all saying, please get this guy away from us. The Republican establishment doesn't want Donald Trump to run. I mean, and in fact, more corporations, as I say, you know, if you know, in the absurd scenario in which Donald Trump is president of the United States of America, he wouldn't help corporations at all because he'd be launching this trade war with China, which would plunge us into a global recession. So I would disagree with the previous caller.
Bob Vanderplaats.
Well, first of all, the only way Trump is going to get Obama reelected is if he runs as an independent. And going back to what Matt just said to David's phone call, you know, I don't think you should blame the GOP. I think it's Trump who's inserting himself into this race. And I think the reason the GOP is even being somewhat receptive, and I'm talking about the grassroots now, maybe even the Tea Party types, is because they want, I think, beyond a fresh face, they want somebody who's going to be bold, who's going to confront the issues facing this country. We know we have a lot of serious issues facing the country, who's going to have a vision for the country, and who they really believe can beat Obama at the end of the day. I think that's part of the intrigue of Trump. Obviously, he hasn't gone through the vetting process yet, but I think the only way he reelects Obama is if he runs as an independent.
Here's Carolyn from Gallatin, Tennessee. Hi, Carolyn. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. How are you?
Hi.
I'm sorry. I'm getting in on this conversation a little late, so I don't have a very well-thought-out answer. However, with regard to Trump running as a president, I'm sorry, that just makes me laugh, and it just makes me wonder about how many photo ops we're going to have with his comb over blowing the wrong way. I honestly don't think there are any good viable Republican candidates. And, you know, you can hear what they say, but when you watch what they do, totally different story. I honestly, in all opinion, as a Green Party member from Illinois, I really think that the whole two-party system needs to be overhauled. Right now, I don't think there are any good viable candidates for any party. This whole country really does need a serious change, and a lot of things need to be overhauled, and Obama is doing the best he can with what he was given. I honestly don't think he's done everything that he intended to do. I don't think he did everything that he ran on. I do commend him for trying, but as far as any of the people that are front runners or even possible for the Republican Party, I just don't see it.
Carolyn, thank you. Some comments from our website. Here's Mira, who says, another obnoxious, ignorant narcissist. Our celebrity culture seems to create them in abundance. Is there no way to get rid of these egomaniacal buffoons? The Donald's candidacy, writes another listener, that's a joke. More flip-flops than a beach shoe. He's a masterful marketer. Here's Corey, who says, if Michelle Bachmann and Sarah Palin can be taken seriously, someone must explain to me why Donald Trump cannot. Here's Bill in Morris, Connecticut. Bill, welcome.
Well, thank you, Jane. A lot of people don't realize Donald Trump's very ruthless. You know, he is, well, during his bankruptcy, he screwed a lot of small companies. I don't know if I should say that word, but, you know, for like one printing company, I know personally, he owed this company over $2 million. Finally, the owner of the company was able to get a hold of him personally after months and months of trying, and he said to her, hey, I spend more on a lunch in an afternoon than what I owe you. So, tough. I mean, this guy is a ruthless business guy, and he has, you know, screwed a lot of small companies. You know, a lot of people don't realize that. He comes off as polished and nice, and yes, he gives money to some big charities, but he's also ruthless in the business world. And that's, I'll take my comment off the air.
Bill, thank you. Matt Continetti.
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree with Bill. I mean, it just goes to show that this is about celebrity more than anything else. To the emailer who said about, lamented our celebrity culture and said, how do we get rid of these celebrities? I mean, the shorter answer is don't watch The Apprentice. But of course, you know, people enjoy the entertainment. The Apprentice is a pretty good show, and I wouldn't be surprised that that's behind Trump's big poll numbers right now. It's just a lot of people who watch him on television and think, oh, look, he's in charge, he's cool, he's, you know, he's telling people you're fired, he's decisive on this television show. You know, maybe we need someone who's a little bit more like that in the White House than President Obama.
Bob Vanderplaats, what about the possibility this was referred to in passing as a third-party candidate? Does Trump have the potential, to your mind, to be a third-party candidate? Would that be considered to be a spoiler, whether inside the GOP or outside? What do you make of it?
Yeah, I think that's all it would be, is it'd be a spoiler. It'd be a sure way to reelect Obama. And that would be a danger of a Trump's candidacy. I read in the Des Moines Register just this morning where he said he would not run as an independent unless he saw a clear path of winning. while being a candidate for public office before, there's no guarantee clear path to winning. You may think you have a good path of winning, but there's no guarantee that you're going to win. So I think his, if he ever did run as an independent, it only guarantee an Obama victory. Going back to Bill's comment about Trump being ruthless, that's all going to be part of the vetting process again, which I think we're excited to engage in here in the state of Iowa. If this is a publicity stunt by Trump, I think it's a risky maneuver. He already has a lot of money. He already has The Apprentice. Everybody already knows who he is. You jump into politics for publicity stunts, typically that has a way of biting you. So I hope it's out of a love for country that he believes that he needs to put his voice in this and to really let people know that you need a change, that President Obama is not a good president for this country at this time.
Matt Continetti, third-party candidate, Donald Trump?
Yeah, I mean, one question is, you know, how big is Trump's fortune? I mean, if it is as bit large as he says it is, then he would have a lot of funds to spend on a third-party candidacy. If it's much smaller than he says it is, which is a possibility, he might not run as a third-party candidate just because he doesn't really have the money. As for spoiler, yeah, I think in this type of race, Trump would probably take a lot from the Republicans. Though, you know, a smart strategist I talked to recently said you never know what a third-party candidate does in this type of situation. Third-party candidates can often hurt incumbents, like they hurt George H.W. Bush in 92, and of course the third party hurt Al Gore, who was more or less the incumbent in 2000. So we'll see, though I hope he doesn't do it.
More to come. Stay tuned. Matt Continetti, I really appreciate your time today. Opinion editor and columnist for the Weekly Standard. This week he is guest blogging for the WashingtonPost.com's Right Turn. From Washington, Matt, thanks very much.
Thank you, Jane.
And Bob Vanderplaats, joining us from Sioux City, Iowa, president of the Conservative Organization, the family leader, and a former candidate for governor of Iowa himself. I appreciate your time, Bob. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane.
You can continue the conversation, listeners, at onpointradio.org. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.